Nick, how are we doing today?
Doing well, Jonathan. I'm excited to be in here with you. I think this is my first like live YouTube like show, you know, like here. So it's cool. Okay. It's cool.
Hello. Hey, good thing you said here, because I think you live on YouTube and other places?
Yes. I'm plenty familiar with the YouTube game.
And YouTube's familiar with you,
I would imagine. YouTube's familiar with me, I think.
Can you bring some crossover? Is this kind of like, you know how in sitcoms back in like the 70s and the 80s, they would just mix it up and all of a sudden you'd have like, I can even go even further than Happy Days and I Love Lucy or something like that. And you have like they would just be a mixed bag. Is that what this is for you right now?
Kinda.
Or at least for the YouTube world?
At least for the YouTube world, yeah.
They're like, wait, what is he doing on this version of YouTube?
On this YouTube, yeah.
I actually do like that. I watch a lot of YouTube golf videos. As evidenced by the fact that I'm still enraged by the idea that he called it fixing a divot on the green. It's a pitch mark, but I'm not going to go down that road. That we don't have to do that. We did the horticulture and everything attached to it yesterday. But like my golf people, they'll constantly switch up on different YouTube channels. And yeah. So like the Brian Bros will all of a sudden go with the foreplay guys, and then they'll go with, with Grant Horvat, and then they'll go with, and I like when that happens. I like that that's a thing in that space where it feels like everyone's constantly just mishing and meshing with everyone.
It is cool. A lot of collabs over on the YouTube stream.
A lot of collabs. I feel like if you have a YouTube in general, like a YouTube account, the idea that comes with it is you have to constantly be collaborating.
Even like Mr. Beast, who's like the top of the YouTube game, like he's bringing on other YouTubers, and it's like, you don't probably need to do that. Like you're Steve Harvey of YouTube. Like there's nobody bigger than you, and he still brings on like smaller people. So it is cool.
Well, it's like the ethos of what YouTube is, right? Is that like at the heart of it? Is that kind of like when I do a radio hit in Sacramento?
Is that
what that is? Although I feel like when I do a radio hit in Sacramento, I'm just wasting time and helping them, you know, take care of 15 minutes.
Yeah, what are they asking you about in Sacramento? That's the thing.
Well, oddly enough, I turned down Sacramento. We had a little bit of a dispute on this show itself. Sacramento asked me to do a radio hit. I said no to Sacramento, and then they immediately went to Nick after me, and then Nick agreed to do the hit.
Wow.
And so I said, you got my Sacramento sloppy seconds.
But what were they asking? Like, I wish...
It's always Shador.
Oh, so they care about that in Sacramento?
They care about it. Yeah, really, so what's interesting about this, the only times I've been hit up is for national hits, and then obviously little spots around the country, and it's just Shador for this year.
Yeah.
Now, in years past, anytime there's... Because here's the thing. Usually I get asked to do those when it's like the Browns are on like a Thursday night game.
Yeah.
Or even a Monday night game. Because then in the local, whatever cities, not even the ones that are playing in the game, but just in general, they're like, all right, we're talking about the Browns because they're on that night. And so you get asked to do some of those in different cities across the country when that happens. But the Browns have had we didn't have a Thursday night game this year. We didn't have a Monday night game this year.
So I was getting hit up a good bit over the summer when I was kind of doing, when I felt like I was leading the charge of the Come Home LeBron stuff. So I felt like anybody that wanted to talk like the LeBron Cleveland angle, like I was the go-to. So I was doing that a bunch. Like I felt like every day I had a different like phone call somewhere different. It was cool. I like doing that kind of stuff. But like you're saying,
it
hasn't really happened ever since, though.
So what I learned, though, this is the difference, though. So like YouTube collabs is fun because YouTube exists in that space. And so if you're on YouTube, you're going to see the different collabs, right?
Yeah.
A person in Cleveland, which is the only people I care about in my radio career at this point, and what I imagine then for the next 30 years or whatever it ends up being, I only care about Cleveland people.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, if I go in Sacramento, I don't really care that a person in Sacramento thinks that I have a great Browns take.
Yeah.
That matters so little to me. That's kind of the problem I had with, like, the Infinity Sports Network stuff that I was doing, was although that was fun, and I enjoyed doing that because it's a great experience. I did it for 5 years, once a week for 5 years. I enjoyed it. I had fun with it. But, like, ultimately, the payoff was just, when we had shows, some shows would be aired here on The Fan, but if we had local programming, I was like, well, what am I doing the show for? To impress somebody in Arkansas? Like to impress somebody in Montana? Like that doesn't do it for me. Even in like the big cities that it would clear in, it's like I don't care that a Detroit sports fan thinks I had a good take.
Well,
that doesn't do anything for me.
I think it's different, too, because, like, we live in Cleveland. We're, like, here, like, when the Browns win, when the Browns lose, like, it is Browns front page news all the time.
Yeah.
But, like, in Sacramento, like, are they really, like, is the Ken Carman of Sacramento, the morning after a Kings loss, going on air and just wreaking havoc?
Oh, you know they are, yeah.
You think?
Oh, for sure. Not even a question.
Over the Kings?
Not even a question. Yeah. Because, like, that's what they do.
Dude, that's a tough existence.
If we didn't have the Browns, okay, if the Browns had left in 95 and had never come back,
yeah.
You and me would be losing our minds over what's happening with the Cavs right now. We would be. We'd be going crazy over, why aren't the Guardians making off-season moves?
Yeah.
Why aren't they spending money?
It's a crazy thought.
We would be talking about these things 24-7 because that would be our existence. It's what we'd care the most about. We'd still sprinkle in the NFL because the NFL is king.
Right.
Part of this, though, is if you're a city without an NFL team, I'm sorry, it just stinks. For you, that stinks. And I know, obviously, we went through that for 4 years in the 90s. I get it. But, and looking back on it with how crazed of a fan base the Browns are and Cleveland is for football, it still blows my mind that they could ever take this team away and not instantly have not only people rioting, but people being like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
This is such a great football city, and they care. Everyone here cares about football in such a great degree. It still blows my mind thinking that it ever happened or was allowed to happen to begin with.
It's a sickness, dude. So one of my best friends lives in San Diego, and they kind of have the same thing where they keep a pulse on what's going on with the Chargers, but it's like, You can't really fully embrace it because that's not your team anymore.
I went to school in St. Louis, and the Rams were still there at that time, and then I watched them leave, and a lot of my good friends they've now switched. They're either Bears fans or they're Chiefs fans. They just had to make up a new call.
But
they're not the same football city. That's a baseball city. You know what I mean? Like St. Louis is a diehard baseball city. You go to anyone's house in June, anyone's house, and they have a Cardinals game on.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not preseason. Think about here, when there's preseason Browns games on at the same time as regular season Guardians games, if you go into somebody's house, it's going to be preseason Browns.
Yeah, so anyway, we get to thank our lucky stars, basically, is the point here, because we get to talk about sports in a city that has a football team and has a passionate fan base, and even through what has turned out to be a really awful season, all things considered, we still have topics every single day, we still have things to discuss every single day, and even things like yesterday with that report involving Jeremy Fowler and Kevin Stefanski, we can still react off of that, and that's where we're going to start today with you guys. By the way, Daryl Ryder joining us at 3:20, Tate Seth, my guy from Sumer Analytics, he'll join us at 5:40. But I want to hear from you guys. 216-474-0092. You said something interesting in the pre-show meeting. We're talking about whether or not this could be Kevin Stefanski's last game as a Browns head coach. I maintain he's going to have the rest of the season. I always think there's not anybody more popular in sports than the interim head coach. It just sets up really bad. The backup quarterback, typically. It just sets up really badly. If you name somebody the interim head coach, and we've seen it here before, obviously, Greg Williams has made a whole case of the idea that he won 5 games as an interim and then didn't get the head coaching job. But if you win as an interim head coach, you have a real runway to make a case.
Especially if you have a cool tagline. Come get some.
Yeah. Was that cool?
At the time, I felt like everybody was saying it.
Ken once did his all 2000s and up Browns team or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I remember pissing him off. It was 4 or 5 years ago. I think maybe 3 or 4 years ago, actually. I made Greg Williams the head coach. Because I was like, he's the winningest head coach by a percentage. His winning percentage, he actually had the most wins. He did what he had to do. I think he went 5-2, 5-3, whatever that was.
What an era of catchphrases that was. Because we went from come get some to the if you don't wear brown and orange, you don't matter. Man, it was
a whoopty hell.
The great times for the local t-shirt economy.
Well, and then Freddie Kitchens was wearing the local t-shirts.
Pittsburgh started it.
The whole everything. He was a content machine.
That was
you talk about
era,
a content
dude.
Machine. Yeah, but he was an idiot, though. He was Alabama Jim Tomsula, and everybody knew it.
Oh, yeah.
The problem with that is that we all knew it was going to fail, and we just watched anyway. But you notice in that stretch why so many people were like, Greg Williams has to be the guy. And I'll never forget debating with people, because the other name that was in hot consideration was Mike McCarthy at the time.
Yep.
And there was a lot of convos about, can you do this with Mike McCarthy? And I remember ringing up the 2015 NFC title game, where I think he single-handedly cost the Packers that entire game. You have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, and you are running like crazy in the second half. You blow a 15-point lead. There are so many things I was just able to reference for McCarthy being a dodo, basically. And then you fast forward, and it's like, well, geez. Maybe they should have done that. Maybe they should have went down that road. But at the time, that was it. It was like Greg Williams was getting serious run. And so that is part of the problem. If you actually make an interim head coaching move, and this is a short amount of time, but let's say they go Tommy Rees instead of Jim Schwartz, and then all of a sudden the light bulb goes off for Shedeur Sanders, and let's say he's great against Chicago and you snipe off a win there, or he's great against Buffalo and you snipe off a win there. People in NFL circles already think Tommy Rees is going to be a head coach one day. You can see where the momentum's going. And so the choice gets removed from your hands. And that's why I feel like it won't happen.
So I felt that same exact way for really the exact same reason. And it's kind of crazy. Like, my big thing has always been, if you're firing a head coach and if you're going to go the interim route, you might as well name the strength coach the interim head coach. Somebody that just has no chance of being, you know, of winning that job, having that Tommy Rees effect.
Like the Raiders did, yeah.
Yeah.
Although, by the way, then he almost won the,
right,
you know.
Right, that almost went that way. Rich Bisaccia, you know, was what that was. I felt that same way until yesterday. And when that Jeremy Fowler report came out in ESPN, the timing of that felt so weird to me. I was like, for that report to come out now, in the middle of the first week of December, when you still got 5 regular season games to go, you have a very winnable game in front of you with the Tennessee Titans coming to town. It made me realize something went off inside my brain. I was like, if there was ever a time for it to happen during the regular season, I do think it would be Monday.
It's the most embarrassing loss you have left on the schedule.
It would, like,
not even close.
Like, if you win Monday and then you could lose out the rest of them, they'll let them play out the string, I truly believe. But, like, with everything that went into Wyatt Teller's benching, now I've got Bubba Ventrone saying that I don't have enough talent on the roster and that they're standing by Gage Larvidan for kickoff, despite the fact that he muffed 2 of punts. Like, all of this culminates into, man, if Sunday goes south, like, that could be it.
So there is the other side of this, too, is that he's still, and there's a part of my brain, and I'm putting this at like a 5 to 10% chance that Stefanski is just doing the bidding of what they want in the front office, and he is executing the plan, right? And the plan being win as few amount of games as you possibly can, and we're going to try to set this thing up. I almost had Nick in what I think might have been close to a checkmate as we get on these conversations when talking about, like, all right, well, why would Stefanski go along with the bid? And what evidence do you have is essentially the conversation. And it's like, well, think about it. 10-8 game last week. You're close at the half. It's a 2-point game. Yep. And then what do the Browns end up doing? You go for 4th-and-1 on the 30-yard line with a rookie tight end in a play that was hurried from the beginning. Like, all these things start to accumulate and you start to look at it and say, maybe he's just doing the bidding. So there is an avenue that exists out there where Stefanski is just doing what they're telling him to do, and he's the in-game part of it that they can control, and so a loss has to be on the table. And instead of saying bad job at the end of this one, they say great, handshakes all around, you executed the plan. Whereas we look like we want our pound of flesh, you need to be fired after this game. There's like a 5 to 10% chance him and everybody else around the Browns secretly go upstairs and say, all right, to tankathon, now we have a top 5 pick. Now we're in the driver's seat to get that quarterback that we want.
Oh, that just feels gross.
I mean, this is the franchise that paid Hugh Jackson bonuses for losses.
It is.
During a 2-year stretch where you won one game. Like, there's nothing above this franchise to what they'll do to go ahead and make sure that they go ahead and get the draft pick that they want.
It just feels gross, because just, like, don't lie to me. Don't lie. And don't even lie to me. I don't care about myself. Like, don't lie to the fans. Like if that's truly what's going on, then Jimmy Haslam shouldn't have said in the preseason that we know what better looks like and we have to be better than 3 wins. 3 wins isn't going
to
cut it.
I'm not going to hold Jimmy Haslam's words to, you know, be anything sort of credible, okay? Like, the man has proven through his professional career and then through this Brown stretch as well that he'll say just about anything at any given point.
You're not wrong. It's just, that's gross.
I can tell you're, it's like sitting into you right now. You're like having this realization that there is a tiny chance that is what's happening. And if that is the case, that's sad. The other part of this, though, and probably the more likely side of this, is what you're alluding to. The idea that they are trying to win these games and they are just a bunch of dodos and not able to pull it off. And if that is the case, then yes, I think everything has to be on the table. Do I think it's going to happen, though, Nick? That's where I'd say no. 216-474-0092. I think Stefanski gets the rest of the season. Nick's saying it's 100% on the table that on Monday, if they lose this game, we are talking about Stefanski being fired and the Jeremy Fowler report being at the heart of that one. Is this the type of game that a loss does, in fact, get people fired? It's Nick Padone, Jonathan Peterlin here with you on The Fan. discussing the Jeremy Fowler report, though, and really the ramifications of what a disastrous loss, I guess depending how you look at it, a disastrous loss for Kevin Stefanski and the Browns this weekend if it does happen.
I think it would, and like, dude, I still think that this would be a disastrous loss. Like, for all the mock drafters that are out there that want to have that top five pick locked up, like, haven't we lived through that so many different times? And it's gotten us nowhere. Like, it's gotten us right back to the same exact position. So, like, when the Browns kick off that football Sunday, 1 o'clock, hopefully it's not another special teams penalty first and foremost. But when they do, like, I'm going to be hoping that they win that game. Like, I want to see the Browns win. I don't care. Like, I've sat through enough losing that you could find your quarterback whenever. Like, and that's not to say that having a first-round quarterback doesn't matter, and if Fernando Mendoza has a good game against Ohio State, of course I'm going to want him. But, like, dude, we've done this game so many times, and it's just gotten us nowhere.
So I tend to think if you have somebody that's truly special, then because Nick has kind of gotten me off of this ledge where I used to always believe in going for draft position and trying to get the best draft position you possibly can. I do think there's something in the idea, that a losing culture kind of seeps in. And once you start losing, it's very hard to understand how to win again. I buy into that. But I do think, like, if there was what was perceived to be, at least when it was, whatever, Peyton Manning, you considered him to be, Andrew Luck, Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, those type of quarterbacks, then when they, like, the perception they had when they were the number one overall pick, right? I'd be rooting a little bit differently. But yeah. I don't think Mendoza's that guy. And I don't even know with certainty that Dante Moore is going to be coming out in this draft. Right. So for me, obviously, I'm rooting for blood. Obviously, I want Shador to do well as the other side of this, too. And so there's kind of a couple things that we're rooting for at hand. I want the Browns to win just because I always want the Browns to win. But I also want Shador to look good in the process. But you have to do special work if you're Stefanski to pull off a loss this week. And I'm talking real special stuff because the Titans are just that bad.
Do you? Their punt returner averages 22 yards per game. That means against the Browns, you could multiply that by four, and you're looking at 88 yards coming up on Sunday. So, like, I don't know that it is going to take special work for the Browns to lose. I find myself nervous about this game. Special work of ineptitude is what I mean. I know.
Am I making that clear? Okay.
I'm nervous about this game.
Wait, so you think, like, if they were just straight up, if the Browns play, like, their A game, they're losing this game? Because that's not even close to possible in my mind.
The Browns defensively, I think, will make Cam Ward's life.
Cam Ward has been the most pressured quarterback in the NFL this year. He's been the most sacked quarterback in the NFL this year as well. Like, he is going to, he'll be on the ground a ton. These drives for the Titans offense is going to be 3, 4, 5 plays long, and that's it. I don't know how they score, Nick.
Special teams. Defensive scores. We saw the Jets, like middle of the pack.
We saw the Jets game, so I can't discount or discredit
the idea
that anything can happen. But that's why I talk about something special happening. If you're going to rely on two special teams touchdowns to happen again, I think that falls under the bucket of something special happening.
Yeah, it would be something special if that did happen, or unspecial, I guess. In if you're describing the Browns special teams,
the Browns can play their D-minus game in this one, and I think you still end up with a win. Like, well, we can see all sorts of mistakes. We can see penalties. We can see ineptitude. I'm not joking when I say this. I think the Titans might be the worst NFL team I've seen in the previous half decade of football. That's how bad this Titans team is. Not only are they bad, they're also really not playing for anything outside of draft position.
I just look at this, I'm like, man, injury report came down, Mason Graham questionable now, I already know I'm not going to have Malik Collins, so that defensive line might not be as ferocious as it is, and like, that is the recipe for the Browns to win games. I think that's something that we could both agree on, is like, the recipe for the Browns in this current iteration to win games is try to sack the quarterback 10 times and to win a 3-0 game. But that's how they play.
It's still impressive if they lose. In many ways, like, impressive in a bad way, if they lose. And I think that's why, like you said, they can get fired. Stefanski can get fired after this one. I think part of that conversation is because of the belief that you're not supposed to lose this game.
Well, also, too, like, what is it, the transit of power is that, like, if you lose to the worst team in the National Football League, then by proxy, you are the worst team in the National Football League.
I just look at record, really, is all I need. But if you want to go, we break this stuff down for the best team. The best team is not always the team with the best record.
Right.
Your eyeballs tell you this is not the worst team in the NFL, though.
No, because
of the defense.
This Browns defense
can't let you be the worst. When we have a championship-caliber defense, you can't be the worst team in the NFL.
And the Titans definitely do not. The Titans have, like, maybe 5 or 6 players in total that probably even belong in the National Football League on
their
our roster.
Next, like, level. Bad.
They're really bad, but that's what makes me all the more nervous about this.
I just think it's what makes it inexcusable if you lose. That's all that is to me.
Well, like, well, definitely.
That's why we were talking about getting fired or something. Like if you lose to the Bills or you lose to the Bears, nobody's even shrugging their shoulders. That's the expectation.
Like, that's exactly what I said prior to the Jets game. Was it not? Like, I was like, here's a Jets team that just sold 3 first-round picks worth of their best players going into that game. When they got a first-round pick for Quinnen Williams and 2 first-round picks from Sauce Gardner, I was like, this is a game, if there was ever going to be one, for Dylan Gabriel to look good, for this Browns offense to wake up. And not only did none of that happen, but they lost that game outright. Not only did none of that happen, but Dylan Gabriel mailed a ball over Malachi Corley's head so high, he couldn't even have caught it if he was Yao Ming.
And in some respects, people were a little too premature on calling that for the Jets, were they not? Jets have won 3 out of their last 5. The Jets had a quarterback problem with Justin Fields. He's not their quarterback now. They had to figure that out. There's a lot of things that happened with that Jets team. I just think they were a little too premature in suggesting that they're on the level of what the Titans currently are. But I'm fascinated by the idea that you think that Stefanski could be fired for this one, because I just don't see it. I really don't. And I'm the guy, I'm rooting for him to be fired. I hope at the end of the season that it happens. They have just strung this thing out for so long at this point. It just feels like just go to the finish line with this, and then we can do the reset, and then we'll go through coaching searches, and we can go through coaching hiring, and we can do everything that we need to do. It feels like after this game, for this game to be the straw that breaks the camel's back, That's what would surprise me, because there's been like 12 different reasons that we can go to where if you were going to break, you would have already broke.
I just look at this week, man, and I can't shake, like, the Wyatt Teller thing is weird, and I know you feel the same way about that. Like, of all players, you chose that player to have, like, almost what feels like a personal gripe with, because if I'm benching anybody right now, like, if it's Nick Stefanski and I'm the coach on the sideline, like, I'm benching Jerry Jeudy first.
You don't have to change your name for a hypothetical where you become the head coach, by the way.
Okay, that's good to know. For moving forward, I'll jot that down.
You could just be Nick Padone on the sidelines.
Like Jerry Jeudy, I'm benching him first.
Buried in your waffle menu sheet.
So I have that, and then, like, at the same, like, the Bubba Ventrone thing was weird.
If they lose this game, you can admit the fix is in that.
That, like, Bubba Ventrone went up there, and he was, like, bulletproof.
We'll talk about Bubba coming up later.
Like Bubba, what? Like, you bulletproof? Like, I've got the support of the staff. I've got the support of the ownership. It's like, dude, why? It's just weird.
They've all had the support of the staff, almost as if they're doing out the bidding. And that's what they like the most about these guys. The puppet that Stefanski appears to be is kind of a feature in this front office. Or for this front office.
And they don't get, like, it is, I agree with you, because, like, you clearly don't care that the stands are empty. You know, the sheer threat of putting Deshaun Watson back on the field when they opened that 21-day practice window. There were panic in the streets. You would think that the boogeyman was roaming the streets of Cleveland just at the thought of Deshaun Watson potentially playing a game for this team ever again.
216-474-0092, Jim and Strong's up next. What's up, Jim? Yo, Jim.
Jim?
Oh, no. Jim's not ready. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, I hate to do it. Jim's like the most prepared caller ever. He's usually right on it.
And it sounded like he was in his car. Like, was he sleeping?
Might have lost reception. I'm not sure. All right, so there's another angle to this Stefanski conversation that I want to have with you, though, because this one is LOL funny, all right? Ken was on this morning, obviously, and he gave this twist to it all, and I want to get your reaction, and I want to stomp it down. Here we go.
What's the light at the end of the tunnel? Do I find a nice landing spot? Do I do that for the Browns? Could I possibly work a trade? I mean, we've been talking about trades all over the place. You want them so bad. Do I possibly work a trade here? I start to think that way. If we're talking about trading for Tomlin and Harbaugh and yada, yada, yada. Okay, why? If it's going to go this way, because this is a report, I didn't make this up. You didn't make this up. This is an opinion. If this is a report talking to league executives here, all right, well, then maybe the Giants want to talk turkey.
Nobody wants to talk turkey when it comes to Stefanski. Multiple times this morning, Ken went down the road of, is Stefanski, does he have trade value? I'll tell you right now, Stefanski has zero trade value. This is not a discussion.
No, because I'll tell you right, like, I don't even believe that report. Like, say Stefanski gets fired at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's going to be a head coach next year? I don't.
I think the market is so bad right now, I could see him landing somewhere. Now the debate is, does he land in somewhere like a Tennessee where he's dead on arrival? Or is he able to land in somewhere like the Giants where it's not dead on arrival? It's not set up as a cushy job, but you have something to work with. I could see either scenario actually happening. I don't believe in Stefanski, but Stefanski is going to get the Browns pass. It's a cousin of the Peterlin Pass, oddly enough.
The Peterlin Pass.
It's like a cousin of that. You get the Browns Pass. In national circles, they look at you and say, well, you coach the Browns, and so what can we really do based off that information?
I just, like, no, like, if you look at the last couple of head coaches that have been traded, it's been for, like, the tune of first-round picks. So, like, if my option is to give up first-round pick for Kevin Stefanski, or I just hire some offensive coordinator that I've never heard of prior to this year, yeah. I'm probably hiring the offensive coordinator that I've never
Bobby
heard
Slow,
of.
It costs you nothing.
Yeah, like, if I'm, like, a franchise that's down that bad, I'm certainly not trading a draft pick for Kevin Stefanski. Now, like, maybe if I could trade a draft pick for one of these other guys that could be fun. Like, if we're trading draft picks for a coach, there's other names that could be on the hot seat that I'd be more apt to trade a pick for than Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah, I mean, with the
I'm
reason,
trading a pick for Tomlin before I trade a pick for Stefanski.
Well, I think even trading a pick for Tomlin's insane.
It probably is, because you similar to the Stefanski thing, you could probably just pick him up off the crap.
But that's kind of the point, though. Like, if they're willing to trade to begin with anyway, then they're willing to part with the guy, just wait it out. They're going to fire him. But also, if I'm not willing to trade picks for Tomlin, then in no world is anybody going to be willing to trade picks for Stefanski.
No. Just because, like, I think that price has to start with a first-round pick when you're trading a coach in the National Football League.
And a first-round pick is laughable in exchange for Stefanski.
And that's what
Stefanski should be thanking his lucky stars he's even in these conversations for a head coaching job to begin with anyway. Nonetheless, somebody trading for him.
I don't buy any of it.
No, I don't either. No, it's absolutely insane. All right, 216-474-0092. Let's get Jim back. I'm giving Jim a second chance here. Hello, Jim.
Sorry, I was going through the car wash there, Johnny.
Understandable.
Listen, yeah, I don't buy any of these reports either. It's a bunch of nameless executives who don't have to put their name to actually hiring somebody. It's like the talking heads. I mean, I can say whatever the heck I want to because I'm not held accountable for it. So, no, I don't believe it. I think people like it, Kevin Stefanski, but I'm not buying that some GM out there is going to, because they're going to have to convince the owner. The owner's going to have to be convinced that, oh, you got to hire this guy. Yeah, you show me the GM out there that's going to put, go to bat for Kevin Stefanski and put his job on the line for him.
Right, and on that, and Jim, I appreciate the call, man. On that, like, what's that pitch? If you're that GM going to your owner, what's the pitch you give that says we have to have Kevin Stefanski?
Hey, here's a guy that won two Coach of the Years. Here's a guy that won some game with PJ Walker time. Like, that's really it, dude.
You're going to be like, what, he's a quarterback whisperer? No, he's not. Wins a bunch of games? No, he doesn't. He's won 6 games in 2 years. What, yeah. Like, what's the selling point? He's an adult. I'll say that.
Yeah, he won't get in a fist fight with me. Like, if you got an aggressive GM, like, hey, he won't come in here and punch me in the nose.
You know what? That might be the best selling point I can come up with, is that idea that if I'm a GM and I hire Stefanski, he'll do my bidding. Like, he will be my court jester, and he'll stand to the side, and he'll laugh at my jokes. And then on Sundays, whether it comes down to game plans, whether it comes down to whatever, he'll do my bidding.
Like, dude, that's what Daryl keeps
saying. There's value in that.
Daryl keeps repeating. Daryl doesn't think there's going to be a change, and he keeps repeating because he doesn't think that Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry are on drastically different pages, and that's usually when Jimmy Haslam makes his fires.
Well, it's always easy to be on the same page with somebody if you disagree to everything that person says.
Yep.
Andrew Berry's writing the page and Stefanski's saying yes to everything that's on the page because he's a bobblehead, then they're never going to expect anything different. All right, we got a lot to get to. Obviously, we'll talk Ohio State coming up at 3 o'clock as well. Daryl himself is going to join us at 3:20. Quick hits next. It's Jonathan Peele and Nick Padone with you guys. Afternoon Drive right here on The Fan.
From the latest news and rumors around the sports world,
go Angels!
To the sound bites you need to hear,
hurry.
It's Quick Hits.
All right, Nick, we're going to start off with Matt Campbell to Penn State. I can't believe that Penn State has fallen into such a... It's kind of just a lucky situation more than anything else. They danced with a lot of partners to end up with none and then end up with what would have been if they had just originally targeted Matt Campbell, a home run hire from the start.
Yeah, I think a lot of people nationally will probably look at this and say that this is like a, last resort hire and Penn State got desperate and all of this stuff. But it's like, well, if you look at what Matt Campbell did at Iowa State without many resources, like, this is actually a pretty good hire. And they missed out on BYU because of crumble cookies and all that stuff. But this is a pretty good hire for them.
I saw Portnoy doing a crumble cookie review today.
Did he?
Yeah, his BYU stuff on. Yeah,
it's a good
yeah.
troll.
It's good. I'm not the biggest crumble cookie guy, oddly enough.
Dude, here's the thing. I always get them. Like, I fall for the marketing, dude. The marketing gets me. The fact that they change the flavors and the pink boxes, and then I get it, and I just get a big tummy ache.
Every year, my sister, she sends that along with the birthday present, like, on the birthday day, because I send her, on her birthday, I send her donuts, right? Because she likes donuts. And then she sends me these cookies. But for the past couple years, it's now been crumble cookies every time, and I've not had the heart to tell her that crumble cookies just aren't my jam. I don't know. It's a wildly successful franchise.
It's huge.
It's everywhere, and I don't know people that are openly like, this is my thing. They clearly exist, though. Do they just exist in private, or do I just not talk enough cookies with people?
I think people like them. I think there are people like me, like, that get hooked with the marketing, but then just end up living with the stomach ache.
I think I just go back to, maybe I'm just more of an old school cookie fan, because, like, Insomnia cookies didn't really do much for me either when that was around, and
it's still around.
I used to love, I meant the one that they used to have on 6th Street, though. Remember that one on West 6th Street that was there? Is that still around?
Yeah.
That one still exists?
The last time that I...
What?
Yeah.
How?
When I lived downtown, it was still there.
Nobody was ever there.
Oh, I was there. You weren't there at the same time that I was.
It's a front for drugs. I don't know what's going on. What? It still exists on right there on 6th Street?
I got the novelty, though, out of this crumble thing that that they were the ones that blocked Penn State from getting the... That's cinema.
It's great. It's great. And Campbell's going to be great there. One of my very good friends in life, he used to play, he was a lineman at Iowa State like 15 years ago, right? And so I've always kept a really close eye on Iowa State. And I mean, the past half decade, they've been ranked in the top 25 twice. In the previous 40 years, they were ranked in the top 25 once.
Yeah.
They're not even the best school in the state of Iowa. And he's got them competing for, you know, actual titles every year, conference titles, but he has them competing for conference titles every year. I think he's a fantastic coach. I think it's a fantastic hire. If anything, it just makes me sad that Penn State could just fail upwards this way. It's kind of the read on it. Because I would take Campbell over the BYU coach all day, every day.
Me too. Me too. I think this is a really good hire for them. And curious to see what he does with some resources now.
Yeah.
Omaha!
Alrighty, Ohio State wide receiver Chris Henry Jr. Doesn't that feel good to say after the 5-star wideout ended the drama and finally committed to the Buckeyes earlier today on the Pat McAfee Show?
Ultimately, I've been committed to the Buckeyes for, you know, a long time. And, you know, with Coach Harlan leaving, you know, really impacted my recruitment heavily. And I really just had to take time to step back and really reevaluate everything. But, you know, sit with my family and taking time to think about it, you know, ultimately I'll be committing and staying committed to the Ohio State University. You know, I just feel like they're the right fit for me. And, you know, I made my decision, you know, a couple of years ago, and it was for the right choice.
The right choice. And he said that it greatly impacted his recruitment. Took a couple days to think about it. And back to where it all started.
I like that everyone's like, you know, I think Hartline leaving is going to be some big thing for the program. And oh no, they're not going to be wide receiver U anymore. And it's like, all right, they'll be fine. They'll be more than fine.
Like, this kid's going to be playing in the National Football League on Sundays in 5 years from now.
And so, like, really, that's got to be the easiest sell. I got a buddy of mine earlier text me, and he's like, oh, Ryan Day landed him. He did it. He got the job done. And I'm like, this isn't selling ice to an Eskimo. This is a pretty easy thing you get to go ahead and do.
Well, there was a report also that came out, I believe it was Rivals, that said, like, new details go into what Ryan Day said to Chris Henry Jr. on a phone call Wednesday night. It was pretty much, hey, we've had 9 first-round picks at wide receiver go to the National Football League. Oregon has had 0.
All you have to do is be like, Emeka Ogbuka wasn't even the best player on this team, and he's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. That can happen for you, too. We can make you Jeremiah Smith if you want as well. We can just be the best all the way around and then go off to the NFL, and hopefully he has a great career. Like, we can make it JSN, right? Unquestionably, you were the best on this team when you were there, and then you got to go to the NFL, and look at you go. But, like, any way you slice it, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You could take the Ogbuka route. You could take the JSN route. You could take the Carnell Tate route, who's going to end up being a first-round. Like, you can do this any way you want to. You'll be fine.
The fact that Oregon fans, like, genuinely believe that they had a shot in this thing is, like, very funny to me. Just because, like, look at what you guys are going up against here.
Yeah, unreal. Of course, if you're a young wide receiver and a 5-star talent, you it's an obvious choice. All right, LeBron held to 8 points. His double-digit point streak ends, and the Lakers win 1,297 consecutive games with 10-plus points. The next two longest active streaks are Kevin Durant at 267, SGA at 170, and so we're just never going to see this broke. This is one of these records that are just never going to be broke again. I didn't like people bringing up like him not scoring 10 in the Dallas series. It's regular season. It's a regular season record. That's just what it is, but it's an incredible feat at that.
And it definitely is cool. I actually saw that LeBron's doubtful tonight because of some left foot arthritis. So like now between the sciatica and the arthritis.
He's getting
LeBron
old quick.
Is every piece of 41 he's
getting,
years old.
He's getting old quick.
Yeah. So it's sad to see that streak end because it does kind of like mark a little bit of an end of an era, as it feels like now with this report that he's dealing with another old man injury. Can I say that? Like, it does kind of feel like we're nearing the end here.
It was
officially.
A cool way to have it go, though, where he had a chance to go ahead and get his 10 points and tie the game if he wanted to. Instead, he kicked it out to the corner three that was open. And so, like, you won the game. And like ultimately, that's a cool, if you're going to have that record snapped, that's a cool way to do it. Now, you're a gambling guy. I'm a gambling guy. You saw that dude that bet 15 grand on it?
I did not.
All right, so there's a guy online. He bet 15 grand, and the payoff then was going to be 15,550 or something, right? So he was going to win $550, and it was just LeBron 10 plus points to the bet. And again, this has happened for 1,267 games in a row. LeBron has scored 10 plus, but he had better odds on this because in the most previous game, LeBron obviously just barely got it done in the fourth quarter, and so Vegas was wondering if this thing was going to be snapped really soon. Guy lost 15 grand.
Brutal.
Trying to snake out an easy 500, and he lost 15 grand.
Brutal. That's a bad beat.
That's a cry in your Cheerios type day.
Yeah.
That's about as upsetting as it gets. I would imagine, though, if you're making $15,000 wagers on whether or not LeBron scores 10-plus points, you probably could lose 15 grand. It's probably an okay thing.
Omaha! All right, well, my next one actually has to do with the number $15,000.
Okay.
Could you believe that? And that says, influencer Steve Will Do It. Are you familiar with Steve Will Do It and his work?
Yeah, he's got a weird face.
Yes.
So I like him. I think he's funny. His whole shtick is he's more generous than everybody, though.
Yeah, so listen to
this. I don't know how you make that your whole shtick.
Influencer Steve Will Do It says he spent $15,000 to take his ex-girlfriend and her family to sit courtside in an NBA game just to have her cheat on him with an anonymous NBA player on that team that they sat courtside at.
Well, I mean, it's Steve Will Do It. We didn't say what he'll do, though. I mean, I guess it makes sense. The name fits.
So if you're dropping $15,000,
why did you just bring up this story just to rub it in this poor guy's face?
To take a young lady. I mean, he said this on a podcast, so he set himself up for this in a way. But like, girlfriend date? Like to me, I think like you've got to be like to take the whole family courtside, like, and then to have something like this happen to you. It's like, well, you probably should have made sure that you were a little bit more foundational in your relationship.
I mean, they probably were dating for like 2 weeks and he did this.
Yeah.
That's the problem with this guy.
That's the thing with Steve Will Do It. He will do it.
I saw something the other day. He was going to spend like 500 grand on, what's her name? Karina, is it Koff? Is that her name? How do you say her name?
I have no idea.
You don't know how to say her name? She dated one of my YouTube golfers for a while.
Karina Koff? Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Max like, I don't know. Might be, might not be. Is that how to say the last name? I have that on my tab page. I don't know. Okay, so Max a fan. Good to know.
I'm going to look at Max's Instagram following right now.
He spent like $500,000 on her, and they're not even like dating or anything. That was like for a chance. The guy just spends money is the point.
Yeah.
And his whole shtick is spending outrageous amounts of money, which is a kind of an interesting shtick because it's like it gets replenished by the idea that people like to watch you spend this type of money and then and be as generous as he appears to be. But it's like a... It's a cycle. It's a cycle that I don't know when it'll end for him, where he just all of a sudden like, all right, I got my 7 million. I'm good.
This time it backfired, like, hilariously.
A little bit.
Omaha!
All right, Jahmyr Gibbs at 3 touchdowns. Lions beat the Cowboys. The Lions needed this one to save their season. Cowboys needed this one to save their season. Who was it? Who was the ramifications of this one's bigger for? The Lions win or the Cowboys loss?
Oh, I think this is huge for the Lions. This is like a fight your way off the ropes win for the Lions. And I know the Cowboys are definitely, you know, have their playoff hopes alive or whatever. But like when you look at the Lions this year, I think a lot of people thought coming into the season that this could be a potential Super Bowl season. And it just hasn't gone that way. So just to stay alive in the playoff conversation in the NFC, I think last night was way bigger for Detroit.
Dallas's defense in the previous three games had looked much better. They looked awful last night.
Yeah.
Seven straight possessions where either the Lions scored or they either then missed a field goal, which was a scoring attempt. The point being is that for the final seven possessions of the game, it just seemed like there was no defense that the Dallas Cowboys actually had.
And then, like, to have Jahmyr Gibbs do that after you just made a trade for a big defensive tackle, like, that...
Dak had a horrendous interception in that game. It bounced off the receiver's hands, but it was pinned in just the right way, where it just turned out to be disastrous in the moment. Like, that was a... It was actually a surprisingly enjoyable game to watch. Although, Al Michaels, what is going on with Al Michaels? That man does not want to be calling football games anymore.
Yeah, it's getting bad.
He's getting in my category. I mean, I basically killed off Lee Corso's career. I've written off. Who else have I written off? Terry Bradshaw.
I have heard you complain I mean, about Al Michaels before. But family, it's getting bad.
The family members need to step in at this point. Like, Al does not want to be doing these games.
No, and like
he's got no interest.
And think about like so. Not only does he have
like
no interest,
he's on Quaaludes.
Like, dude, just the stress. Like, they're flying him all around the country to do these games. Like, let the man just sit at home and play on his tablet. That's probably what he wants to do.
He probably, yeah. He's like a solitaire guy on the tablet, like a Stephen A. Smith type guy. He just wants to just kind of hang out and then do anything.
How big a font is he using on that tablet?
The biggest of fonts. The biggest. he doesn't want to do this. Let him free. Some family member needs to step in and be like, hey, dad, hey, grandpa, we love you. You're not enjoying these games. Everyone can tell. That's a great game last night. Al Michaels ruined it in many ways. All right, 216-474-0092. How much does the Big Ten title game mean to Ohio State fans? Daryl Ryder joining us at 3:20 as well. It's Jonathan Beadle and Nick Padone right here on Afternoon Drive.